Hey guys, it's Jessica, founder of Noonday Collection. Welcome to the You Matter podcast. On this podcast, I want you to get ready to be inspired to be more courageous and to own your worth. Get ready to feel connected to the artisan community and to the community where you have a place of belonging, the ambassador community. Because the truth is, you matter, and I'm so glad you're here. Welcome to the conversation. Well, guys, this is our last You Matter for 2016, and I'm just love that we're ending on such an inspiring note, being reminded by our partners in Ecuador and our partners in India what we are doing to build a flourishing world. And as you hear these stories and as you understand the impact, see yourself in it. I think it's easy to get to the end of the year, you know, bad news sticks on us like Velcro, good news slides off us like Teflon. And as you get to the end of this year, you might be looking back and thinking there was this obstacle or there was that, and I'm not where I wanted to be in my business. And I want you to take a moment to really have gratitude for what you accomplished this past year. And to understand that you were able to contribute to these stories of impact that you are hearing today. And now as we're approaching 2017, I want you to renew your vision for what we're doing. You know, a few years ago, I scribbled down on my computer that I wanted Noonday Collection, which at the time was literally me in a guest bedroom with a website built on pawn jewelry I had sold at a pawn shop. I scribbled down that I wanted Noonday Collection to be the largest handmade fair trade direct sales company in the world. I said I wanted, I had a dream for Jolly to lead a movement in Uganda of women who are discipled and trained and earning a sustainable income. And I talked about how I wanted it to be a platform for women here to get to build their own businesses as a ministry in their spheres of influence. Guys, I was nowhere near. That was an impossibility. I didn't have a business partner yet. I didn't have resources, and I definitely didn't have the knowledge, but it's the vision that has made me unstoppable. And I want you to think about that for you, for your 2017. What is your vision that is going to make you unstoppable? Because as an ambassador, you're getting paid for your vision and for your stamina. And why is that? It's because people say yes to vision. People follow vision. You're here because of my vision, and your hostesses and your team members are there because of your vision. And so we often get stuck thinking, oh gosh, if I just lived in a different town, or if I just knew people that had more access to disposable income, or if I just had this ability, my business would be different. But we're not limited by our abilities. We're limited by our vision. And I want you to encourage to stand with me, because when I started Noonday, we were in $50,000 worth of credit card debt, to be frank with you. I mean, Joe might correct that number. It might be 30. I'm terrible with numbers, but let's just say that we were in a very hard place. The real estate market had crashed. Our dream for adoption, seemed like it was just not, couldn't be a reality. And so I need you to think about your vision for 2017. It needs to be as real to you as the car you're driving in right now, or the couch that you're sitting on right now, or is the floor you're standing on right now, because it is that vision that is going to give you the stamina that you need. We at Noonday Collection, one of our key pillars is long-term partnership. And in order to have long-term partnership with our artisan partners, I need you to have long-term partnership vision to be an ambassador. And so this is your opportunity. Celebrate your successes from this past year and celebrate your obstacles, because your obstacles are only those things that are help you lead to change and that help you to grow and help you to get better. And so I want you to share. I would love for you to get on Facebook. I know many of you listening right now are coming to shine, but many of you are not. And I want us to begin to share what is our vision for 2017 that's going to help us reach that next level. I just got an email from a group about a month ago living in Orissa, India, asking for more orders. We're beginning to have talks with this group that I've been dying to work with that works with women coming out of brothels in Asia. And they said, Jessica, there are 30 brothels around us and we could do recruitment campaigns into those brothels if we can work together. And so my vision is as strong and as clear as ever. And when you have a strong and clear vision, that it keeps you from looking to the right and to the left and getting tripped up on comparison and getting tripped up on looking around. And I want you to believe with me, you are the ones who are creating this impact. You are the ones who are creating a marketplace. And so let's together have this vision to build a flourishing world by empowering women, by cherishing children, by creating dignified work. And that all happens by you having vision for the woman in your community. And it happens by having you having vision for your business, not for what it is now, but for what it can be. So thank you for everything that we've been able to accomplish this last year. And I look forward to growing with you even more in the year to come. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Hi, this is Karen Gibbs, and I had the opportunity this morning to sit in my kitchen with Moon Sharma of Tara Projects in India while she was sitting in her kitchen in the evening. We had an opportunity to catch up. I am continually impressed, as I was this morning, with the grit and tenacity of our artisan business partners. These entrepreneurs, these leaders like Moon, they are relentless in their commitment to using business as a tool for social good, working in challenging situations that are certainly beyond my comprehension. And for the artisans that they work with who persevere in producing these beautiful products in working conditions and economic conditions where I would just easily give up. And they humble me as I look around and I see how privileged I am with the resources at my fingertips. But more importantly, they motivate me. We are connected to them in so many ways, in the products that we touch and in the stories that we exchange and in the work that we do together. And if they can walk through the difficult conditions that they face, then I can certainly hustle out there and get products here on time and encourage people to sell more and encourage people to buy more. So I hope you find Moon's words as humbling and motivating as I do. But I wanted to speak with Moon at this time because I wanted to share with all of you the current economic environment in India. I don't know if any of you have followed it, but they're going through quite an economic crisis. And it's impacting the production of our products. And it's impacting, most importantly, the lives of the artisans and the communities where our products are being made. And it's really important for us to understand what's happening so that we can send our good thoughts our way and just understand what is the other side of our connection, what is happening in their lives right now. So just a little overview. Moon spoke about many of these details, but essentially what's happened is that the government decided to take all of the 500 and 1,000 notes out of circulation, and they announced this very quickly. And without, it seems like without much of planning. So essentially, with very little notice, a day came when all of the $500 and $1,000 rupee notes were no longer valid. So, and they were replaced by new notes. So they did this in order to avoid what they felt like was a currency black market that was going out of control and a lot of corruption. So a good intent, but it was not very well organized. So the $500,000 notes represent 86% of the currency that's in circulation in India. So it really impacted a lot of people, and particularly in the informal sector, which is the artisan sector, because informal sector is totally cash dependent, right? People do not have ATM cards and bank accounts where they're able to write checks and easily transfer money. So they're very dependent on cash. So buying the raw materials, getting paid, supporting their families. It's totally cash-based. So what happened is they can definitely exchange their old currency into new notes, but basically the government couldn't get them new currency fast enough. So essentially the economy, particularly the informal economy, just halted. The central market in Delhi closed for several days. We've seen a big migration of factory workers that are heading back home just because they're not able to support themselves in the larger cities where they're living. We hear stories of artisans in from all of our partners who are not able to make it to work because they need to stand in line in order to exchange money. And the amount that they're allowed to exchange on a daily basis is actually limited, so they can try to get currency out. So they're able to exchange about between $30 to $40 a day maximum. But oftentimes they'll stand in line and then the bank runs out of the currency. So it's really, it's a pinch that's just very profound. It's having a big impact on the economy and particularly on the poor. You know, I think it means that Noonday's orders and the work that our partners are doing on the ground to help all of the communities and artisans that they work with through this difficult time is all the more important. So without further ado, let's hear from Moon. Moon, why don't you, can you start off by introducing yourself?
Yeah, hello, Karen. It's nice to speak to you. First of all, I just want to wish all the friends at Noonday and especially our ambassador friends Merry Christmas and also a very Happy New Year. I would also like to thank all of you for the cooperation in 2016. And certainly it has helped our work and lots of artisans, and it has a very positive impact on their lives.
Oh, thank you so much, Moon. It's a pleasure. Thank you for taking the time. I know this is your evening time. Thank you for taking the time from your family to speak with us today. We really so value these stories directly from what's happening.
Yeah, I wanted to say that my family is a larger family, and all the ambassadors and the friends and Noonday is also the part of my life. So I'm very happy to speak to you and to all the ambassadors.
Thank you, Moon. Thank you. Your voice is such an encouragement and an inspiration to us all. So it's really wonderful.
Thank you.
So, Moon, I would love to just kick off by diving into what is a very, I think, complex and very important topic today, which is certainly on the minds of so many of us sitting at Noonday's office and thinking about our work with all of our partners in India and especially with Chara Projects. But I know you've been through, your country has been through quite a bit over the last few weeks with the currency situation. And I know many of our ambassadors would love to hear from you firsthand exactly what's happened and what impact is it having on Chara Projects and the artisans you work with.
Yeah, it's already actually 4 weeks when all this started. And one evening we heard that our prime minister was speaking and he announced that the demonetization of 500 and 1,000 currency note. You have to know that 86% of this currency is in circulation in India. And the reason given and ideologically we all agree is that to curb the black money. And because there is also holding and the terrorist problem, so they said it is going to help to fight terrorism and certainly black marketing. So though we were very shocked, but we thought it's certainly a good idea. But the weeks followed were really of difficulty because suddenly, I mean, we found that there was no money in the banks. And though the government was talking all the nice things and it's going to help poor, but what I see after 4 weeks, that we have lost more than 122 persons standing in the queues. And wow. The rich people, they had no problem, and the people who had sat in through the banks, they could get their money, but it was the poorest people, and they are in millions, who were really affected. Even I've seen people, I was in Hyderabad recently for a workshop, and we happened to be out around 2 o'clock in the morning. And 3 o'clock, people were standing in the queues in front of the ATMs. So the whole initiative is unfortunately very badly managed, and it has affected our lives. When we talk of the general people, we are also included in it.
You know, you gave us a context of what's happening in India right now, which is that the 500 and 1,000 rupee notes have been taken out of circulation, right? And the government
yes.
did it so abruptly and really
yeah.
essentially, and what I understand is that, you know, artisans had these $500,000 notes in their pockets, right? And then the next day, no longer, the money was no longer accepted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is the 86% of our currency in circulation. That is 86%.
Wow.
So 500 is very normal. And the sudden demonetization had its very negative effect on the unorganized sector.
Mm-hmm.
And handicrafts come in that sector, of course. And agriculture, for example, farmers are affected. And our artisans, of course, their lives are also rather difficult at this moment, because you know, the government says, yeah, you go to the bank and you can take 2,000 rupees, 2,500 rupees from the ATM per day. But the biggest problem is that you are standing in the queues for hours and hours. And for days, by the time your number come, there is no money. So they come back. So the whole life is very much disturbed. The whole work is disruptive at this moment. So it is very badly managed by the government.
Yeah. So
and,
a good...
We don't... Because what is happening, I mean, it's a strange phase of our society, because somewhere... We are dividing. We are the victim of the politics, which is full of regionalism, nationalism, and communalism, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, because I myself believe the whole world is like a family, and and we have the right to migration, and we have right to speech, and we have right to say what we want to say. But somehow it's not the case. It's very rare. So many people who are somehow the victim of this ideology, communalism, they think, oh, it's fine, and they just support what is not right. So it's a very confusing stage, actually, because people don't understand. They are not aware what is right and wrong somewhere, because majority of them, the people are innocent on that level, so they
yeah.
don't know. They are somehow the victim of the system.
Yeah.
Because, so it's a very, very yellow politics, or yellow journalism, like you said, yellow politics. And the leaders are somehow, on the name of poor people, they are looking at their own interest.
Mm-hmm.
So we are going to have elections soon in one of the biggest states in India. So that is why this action has been taken, because they said that it will help the poor people. But I'm not sure, and a lot of us have big doubts that how it's really going to help, because when we have 122 people already died, And it's really thousands of people have already migrating from the urban areas back to their home because there's no work. So how is it going to support, and how it has supported so far? Mm-hmm. So it's somewhere, it's a very, very autocratic and badly managed initiative.
So while it had good intent, right, the big objective of trying to get this black money out of circulation and to stabilize the currency.
Yeah, objective was, of course, to black money, and I think everybody supports that. But how it's going to come, because most of the black money is outside India, and also it is already spent in the properties or in some other, in the gold or some other ways. So it's hardly any black money coming out. It is our money, because we were asked, okay, yeah, it's your money has no value. You have to go back to the bank and give it back. So it was it's like my sister have some money and you have some money and the family, women keep 50,000, for example, for the dowry of the daughter, or it's very normal because we live in a cash economy, so you keep little money at home. So all common people were putting back their money to the government. So this is a big question that is it common people's money or it is black money is coming back? It's not, but we still have to see. It's 10 days. Are left, and we hope situation will improve. But so far, life is really difficult, and it has affected many of our producer groups.
So describe a little bit, Moon, how this has affected, like, the group Tara 8.
For example, we have the group for Taja 8. Huh? It is in Haryana, Patodi, left, and there are more than 25 artisans are working there, and they are, in fact, gold in our earring. I think we are making for noonday, so they are busy in making it. But you need raw material, for example. So raw material, it's a chain, you know, when it comes to the shopkeeper and from the industry. But this work is very much disruptive because there is hardly, any raw material available, because there's no movement of cash money. So they could not take it on time. On the other hand, people you have to pay every month when you go to the bank. So you have money in the bank to check, but you cannot take your money because it's only 2,000 rupees you can take. And artisans are standing in the queues to get the money. But in the end of the day, they say there is no money left. Mm. Because somewhere, some very powerful people who have a network, they may have taken some money, what is coming out. But the poor people like artisans, they cannot get. So it was very difficult even to have our salaries. We had to live on a very little money. So this is what is happening right now, and it has really a very, very negative impact. And also it's very depressive because suddenly your work has stopped.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how is there any way that, I mean, first of all, I have to congratulate Tara Projects, because in terms of your deliveries to Noonday, you still consistently manage to be on top despite all of these challenges that you're facing. So just huge kudos and congratulations to you for that, upholding that.
Yeah, thank you. Because we have to be very optimistic, and we were all supporting each other where it was possible. Mm-hmm. Of course, there are some delays. And if I talk of the unorganized craft industry in general, many workshops are closed. Many people have lost their jobs. They are going back, especially in the garment industry. But somehow we could keep ourselves intact and supporting each other. So the work is slow, but it is going on. So I feel happy. At least we are pulling on.
And Moon, why do you think, how have you been able to continue going when others have had to close?
Yeah, maybe because first of all, we have a kind of a system, and with the raw material, we fortunately we had some with us because we work with we give out to our artisans advance payments, so which is really helpful. So they could buy somehow, and of course we have different assembling systems. So, as I told you, of course, it's slow, but we were lucky that at least we have some raw material with us. But at present, we have got some new design development, for example, from Noonday. And glass beads, it's very difficult to make because glass rods are not available. Mm-hmm. And the glass rods makers, they need all money in advance, huge money, and we don't have. So that is at the standstill at this moment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All because of this currency issue.
Yes, because we are not allowed to take out, and the check doesn't help, because you really need to buy from one channel to other channel. Raw material is that kind of commodity.
Mm-hmm. So one of the, you know, the craft sector is an informal sector, right? And there's so many.
Yeah, glass also, yes, yes. Yeah. Because, and artisans, I mean, even the situation is rather bad in the health because, some of our artisans were sick. So thankfully we have a health project, so we could help because we had medicines. But otherwise, you if you go to the shops, you have to buy from medicine with the cash money. Mm-hmm. And it is another big, big challenge. So many people are sick, and if they don't have money, you cannot buy the medicine, and it's happening. Even the hospitals are not accepting the cards, or because they are not ready for the cashless system.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a difficult situation. Yeah.
So Moon, how can Noonday and the ambassador community help you during this time?
You have already helped us. You are helping, and we are very grateful to Noonday because we are working on your orders right now. So we have work. So the whole scenario is very depressive, and people don't have work. But we are very happy that at least we get some work from Noonday. And I was today in the office, and I was seeing they were working on the bracelets from Noonday. And I have to see 1 minute that we call it, I think, Province Bracelet, huh? So in the last day they are working, and also we are just in the process with the golden hour earrings. So we are happy that something is going on. So this is already a great help, and we are thankful to all of you.
Well, we will. I think our relationship is only growing in the future. So please know that our support is always there. So.
Yes, I mean, the times when you hear from many of your partners in Europe, even from 10,000 villages in USA, things are not going well, then Noonday is a hope for us. So we hope Noonday will continue to shine,
mm-hmm.
and we all pray for.
Yes, yes. Well, certainly Noonday is one of the most innovative companies out there. So it's wonderful to see those results pour forward.
Yes, and we are doing a lot on the quality levels and development levels. It really has a very positive impact on our organization and the lives of artisans. So we are very thankful, and we hope this relationship will continue for a long time.
Hey Hey guys, it's Katie, your community manager, and I am here today with Joy, and she is the director of operations from Andean Collection in Ecuador. Thanks for coming, Joy.
Hi guys, it's great to be able to spend some time and get to chat with you a little bit about more what we're doing, and really just excited to be able to share with you.
Yeah, it's always a treat whenever we have a visitor that works directly with the artisan groups, and you're our first from, I think, South America.
Oh, wow.
To have on the podcast. So.
Well, in that case, I feel like I should start the saying, buenos dias. ¿Cómo están todos acá?
Very fitting. Yeah. I have no idea what you're saying, except hello.
Just, yeah, good morning, and how's everyone doing?
Awesome. So, yeah, Joy, I would love for you to explain what your role is at Andean Collection and how you ended up there.
Yeah. So my title is I'm the director of operations, the in-country director for Andean Collection. And I ended up there to kind of like, I really see it as, kind of like a greater force guiding my path. I didn't imagine that I would end up this when I think about like what I set out after college. I didn't picture this at all, but I feel like a lot of times, maybe some of you guys can relate, those choices that we make that you don't expect, these paths, they take you on different places you don't expect to be, that they end up being the most remarkable journeys. Yeah. And so I, to kind of like really briefly, after college, I graduated and I was really interested in doing international development. And
you went to school in the U.S.?
And I did school in the U.S., yeah. Mm-hmm. I grew up in Connecticut originally in New England. And yeah, I ended up doing a master's in social work and really was interested in doing international development work and wanted to kind of help people abroad, but wasn't sure how to break into that. And so initially a friend was able to get me a job teaching at an international school, and then that led to different opportunities. And so in total now, I've been in Latin America for going on 9 years. And mostly working for different nonprofits. And so I've spent some time, a couple of years in Honduras, I was in the Dominican Republic, Argentina for a year studying, Bolivia, and now I've been in Ecuador for about 4.5 years. And so my background is coming from social work was working in managing nonprofits and really focused on public health largely and community development. But with that, I kind of wanted to make a switch because what I was seeing was that there was really a need to help people have better incomes. And the fact that when you can provide people with a steady job and a better income means that they're better able to improve their quality of health and their own quality of life just from that. So specifically, I was working in Honduras, and one of the things we were doing was we were building clean burning stoves, latrines, and kind of other kind of public health focused projects. And in the villages we were working, these families, there would always be one or two families that were just a little bit better off, and they already had a latrine. And so we weren't going in and convincing people that they needed this, but they weren't able to access it because of their own means. And so that's kind of what drew me to kind of like this fair trade world of being able to help people have a better income. And so
you saw that empowerment through it.
Exactly. Yeah. And so how just like being able to have like a slightly better income really makes the difference. And so Latin America, like poverty is maybe a little bit different in Latin America than kind of like the stereotypical poverty of what you think of maybe in Africa with like famines and things like that. People are at a different sort of like economic level in the sense that there's poverty, but poverty there looks like the fact that you have like no safety net. And so something happens in your family and you're completely wiped out. So like, for example, I was talking with one of the women that we work with, and she was describing to me how her father was in his later 50s, 60s. He had been robbed. And in the course of the robbery, he was hit in the eye. And so the eye had developed a really bad infection. And so to be able to treat that, he needed like an injection, which was going to cost $55. And the family couldn't find $55 for him to be able to get that injection. And so he was going to lose his eye. And that's what poverty looks like, is the ability, the fact that you don't have enough money to mm-hmm. be able to just provide those basic needs. And so maybe people aren't starving, but there's like that level of poverty. And so
it almost compounds on itself.
Exactly.
And it's almost like, when you're in poverty because of that circumstance, you're more at risk for things to compound
exactly.
and get worse and
exactly.
get out of poverty.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so that's what I think really is like the value of providing people with jobs, and specifically speaking to Latin America and Ecuador, is the ability that people then can then provide for themselves. They don't have to go to, it's fantastic if they're, say, like a free organization and they're providing some sort of free healthcare, that's great. But if people are able, so much more empowering to them personally if they have the means to be able to support themselves. And so that's, yeah, so that's kind of how I ended up with Indiana Collection. So I applied for a position, kind of had like the type of background they were looking for, and here I am. Yeah.
That's great.
It's been a fun learning curve, but probably maybe for some of you kind of running your noonday business, learning about business. Mm-hmm. I didn't come from a business background, never studied business, and I didn't even really picture myself working in business, but the mission is kind of what drew me in and the goal. And then there's been a crazy learning curve about how to do marketing and how do you have like, how do you manage an inventory and how do you kind of communicate your message and all sorts of things that come are different from running a business than I had ever imagined.
Yeah. And I bet that's resonating with a lot of the gals listening right now, that you, as the director of operations for one of the groups you partner with, like, you know, you evolved into this and you found this and you learned just like they're learning how to run a business. And that's so amazing.
Yeah.
So what exactly do you do at Indian Collection then?
Yeah. So we're a small team in Ecuador. And we kind of see it as like two different main aspects of what we're managing. So we're doing product development. And so even before like we present samples to the Noonday design team, we've actually done a lot of different renditions internally. And so Noonday will kind of give us like their basic ideas. And so the design team here is really fantastic in that each season they're kind of predicting the trends, what are the colors going to be, but really kind of the mood that they want to convey. Mm-hmm. And so we're kind of taking that and running with it. And then the design team will also feed us some like very specific ideas and we're kind of making the samples. And so really keeping in mind, like, what does your kind of customer look for? And trying to think about like what it kind of like is the atmosphere and the spirit that they want to create. And then also trying to be price sensitive because we understand it's a challenge for to be able to sell product that you want, it needs to be at a fair price.
Yeah.
And so kind of, I'm kind of in that role of like, we want to make sure that it's being fair to our artisan partners, but then we also understand that it needs to be sellable because it's very realistic, you know, it's at the end of the day.
So this is like a perfect example of collaborative design. And we recently had an episode where Sarah on the design team, I don't remember what episode, but it was in the last five at least. And she talked about collaborative design and why that's really empowering. And it's really educational for both parties, but that it seems to be a really unique aspect to the relationships that Noonday and the groups that we partner with have. And yeah, so I guess that's a great segue as to why you're visiting here.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about that?
Fantastic. Yeah, this is my first time visiting the Noonday offices, and actually my first time getting to visit Texas and Austin. And I'm really quite enjoying it all, and Southern hospitality is coming from New England, where we, you know, stereotypically are a little bit colder, Southern hospitality really lives up to its reputation.
Yeah, oh, and something to note is, so we're recording this on December 2nd, and last night was the Noonday holiday party.
Yes.
And it worked out where Joy was able to attend, and so she got to be part of the Noonday family last night.
It was, and who made me feel incredibly welcome, kind of really, it's been fun to be able to meet people who I've only been in contact with via email and maybe an occasional Skype call, but really to be able to put some faces, and everybody is so much kinder and even more lovely than they come across on an email.
Uh-oh, yeah. I'm just kidding.
Which, no, and like emails, everyone seems quite nice, but it's an email. And then, you know, yes, like, you're like, wow, these are, exactly. And so, yeah, this is just kind of like a chance for me. We're going over, because things are having to kind of, one of the things I think Noonday does really well is they give us a great amount of lead time to be able to develop our product. And that, because products are being made handmade, we have to, and Andean Collection, we're not just hand making the necklaces and the bracelets, but we're actually making all of the seeds and all the tagua beads. And so all of that, there's like, we need kind of like a long lead time to be able to do that well and not to be putting pressure on the artisans. And so Noonday does a great job with that. And so what I was here doing is, reviewing the fall 17 collection. And so kind of like pulling together, which is kind of a whole year ahead of time.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
There's a lot of this team here. Yeah. But kind of like thinking that through and like, what are some of those designs and what kind of edits and changes need to be made to those designs to kind of really tailor them a little bit better. So doing that and then just getting a chance to meet the whole team here and see the whole operation. And what are the things that, I don't know, just like it was, I was kind of struck by just like the size of it. And a lot of people, especially a lot of people in fulfillment that are really doing a lot of great work and little things like how the packing is done, like taking the time to like pull the necklaces and really package them nicely. So that way when they arrive to your customer, they're looking beautiful.
Yeah. And there's all that in between process of QCing, like quality checking and all of that. There's so much that goes into it.
Exactly. A few things that I appreciate about Noonday, and I was kind of like expressing to Travis and his wife last night, is Noonday really stands out to us. So we're a provider. We do work with some other customers in the U.S. And Noonday does really a fantastic job in a couple of different areas. I think they do a great job. And I mean, this is like really nitty gritty, but you probably could see it as well, is like they pay us on time. And it's like, as a small business, that really makes a huge difference. Also, Noonday is super transparent. And so working with us, letting us know like when orders are going to be coming through, what's like to be expected, what their kind of background process. And like in the business world, a lot of times things can be very closed doors and kind of secretive, but Noonday is fantastically transparent. And so we really appreciate that a lot about just Noonday. And then just the fact that I feel Noonday above and beyond any other partner that we work with, Noonday really truly does seem to care about our artisans. And they take them into consideration in the decisions that they're making, the strategic decisions that they're making, how they decide. They don't just pick a piece based off of like the look and the price, but they're really thinking about the long-term partnerships with these artisans so that they can have like a long-term income, which as an artisan group is incredible, because what our goal is, we don't want to just give people like a job for like a few months and they have an order and then that's it, it disappears. And then they're kind of just like, we want for this to be something that's really sustainable. And Noonday, more than anybody else, really has that vision. Mm-hmm. And so they make strategic, part of their strategic decision-making, it makes their process so much more complicated, but I really appreciate is how they have taken the artisans' livelihoods in mind, and the fact that that they're to be sustainable, that there's like a amount of growth that people can depend on it. It can become like a dependable source of income, and they can kind of plan on it. So they can be planning their lives, opposed to like, okay, here's one random bonus and then goodbye forever.
So is one, I guess, tangible example of that is like during the design process, designing towards like that, there's like this trend curve that we've talked about, and I'm going to butcher the names, but the general idea is like there are some trends that are going to be like point in time just for that trend season. Exactly. Some are going to be a little bit more, I use this word and I don't mean to use it so often, but kind of evergreen, you know, it carries through. And is an example of that, designing towards something that can be kind of more timeless and carry over. And so it's something that we can reorder and continue to provide.
And then just like specifically as like they're thinking about their trends, like, okay, so we're like chokers being like a big trend that's coming up. And so then making sure that like, okay, this artisan group, we need to make sure we're giving them designs that are going to be include them in that so that they have new designs this season.
Yes.
And so thinking that through very carefully, or like, and then this artisan group, we know that pendants are a long-term kind of success. And so they'll have like some pendants. And so really thinking that through, that it just doesn't, so it's really well distributed.
Yeah. Because there's more than one just, group that is involved, even with Andean Collection. Mm-hmm. And so they want to make sure that all of those groups are participating and have work.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so kind of to that, speaking to that, like, so one of the things that we've done with Andean Collection that we're really proud of is in the last few years, we've been able to launch our own workshop. Andean Collection, we work with independent family kind of families, and they have like their small independent businesses. But then recently, we started our own workshop, and with the goal specifically of being able to provide people with a constant sort of employment that means they can, it's something that they can depend on. And so they have a set salary every single month. They will receive like production bonuses above and beyond, but they have a set salary that they can depend on every single month. Mm-hmm. In addition to that, the women who work for us, we have 10 women specifically who work for us in our workshop. They have full health benefits, full retirement benefits, and paid vacations.
Wow.
And so, and that's something.
Is that typical in Ecuador?
It's not typical. And even like within the artisan world, it's something that's hard to achieve. And so that's something we're incredibly proud of, because for these people, that means they have the dependability of that job. Yeah. And then they have the sense, the security that even when compared to like a piece rate work, if they are to get sick, they know that they still will be able, they'll be paid. They have paid sick leave. They'll be able to receive the health care that they need. And it's not going to, like the circumstances we were talking about at the beginning of our chat was a potential illness is not going to just like wipe you out. And so having that security, that's like something that really makes a difference in somebody's life. And so we're excited about that.
That's amazing. And it makes me think about this idea that I've talked about in the podcast before, that being at Noonday has really opened my eyes to like, or changing my preconceived impression of like, okay, this is awesome. It's providing work. But I used to view it as like, you know, just a means to an end. And what I've learned through Noonday and, you know, talking with people like you is this is a career. And it's this longevity and this career path for the women and men who work in the handmade industry and the groups that we partner with. And that was such an assumption on my part that it wasn't that. And I'm so glad that that has been shifted for me because, like, what a much more I know I've used like this for a lot too, but sustainable and empowering pathway for them. Mm-hmm. And it really helps close that gap of thinking that someone who lives in another country is different than me. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, we're really not that different.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things. That's one of the things I've really enjoyed most about the work is I have like a lot of close contact with our artisans. And like now that I've been there for 4.5 years, I've like really seen people, like I've really just seen how people's lives are. And the biggest takeaway is they're really the same. And so like moms are very concerned with like their kids and make the fact that their kids do well in school and they want their kids to be able to succeed in life. And like pretty much most moms, like that's their biggest focus. Like that's like their biggest goal. And like people like even to the women, some of the women we work with. So Nancy and Carlos is one of the artisans that we've had partnered with from the very beginning. And so then as Noonday as well. And so Nancy has, she has 4 kids. And her oldest kid just graduated from high school. And I think like a lot of, maybe you can identify that sense of like, okay, now what is my kid going to do? I have to like get, you know, kind of to like push him to study and he doesn't know. And like, she really wants him to go on to university.
Well, and you know what? I bet because she has this career with Annie Collection, she has time to focus on those things with her kids. And absolutely, she has the attention.
Absolutely. And like Nancy herself didn't finish. She only did basic elementary education. And so the fact that she sees this as like a, she wants her children now to go to university and to have something more, I think that really speaks to the fact that how her life has been changed. Like her family has gone from being much more like at a poverty level to being middle class, and middle class people want for their kids to have a university education and to be professionals and to be able to have like an actual career and not just like a job that's like to live off of, that's like giving you the basic needs, but it's actually like something that's fulfilling. And that's what she wants for her kids now. And so that's like,
it's changing generations. Yeah,
absolutely. Exactly. And so her kids won't be kind of at a substance level. They won't start. They didn't grow up in that sort of atmosphere anymore. And they have different possibilities. The fact that it is like a realistic possibility for them to be able to have advanced studies is really transformational.
Well, and it reminds me of the idea of the American dream. But I love that it's the Ecuadorian dream.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and it makes me feel, it gives me chills to hear that like, that's happening and not just America.
Yeah.
You know, and everyone deserves that, that being able to pursue that and to be able to provide that. And I love that she has that through y'all.
And one of the other great stories of another great girl we're working with. So one of, in our workshop, there's a girl, there's the Tamia necklace. The Tamia necklace is kind of like really a great piece. And so Tamia's sister, Tamia's a girl who works in our workshop, and her sister is Sarita. And Sarita is studying business. And so both Tamia and Sarita are using the income that they've gotten from working with us with the Andean Collection to be able to pay their way through college. And so their family didn't have like the means to be able to do that, but they're doing weekend classes and they're both finishing their college education. And so Sarita specifically is studying business. And so once we kind of like realized that and also have really been able to see like where she's coming from, we decided to give her a different role within the company. And so we gave her a raise, we gave her a new role, and now she's working with on the administrative side as like a production assistant and is really helping to oversee a lot of those aspects. And so that's really exciting for us too, to see how she's been able to grow, and because of her great abilities and her hard work. But then the means is that she has now a path to have like this job that she's like much more, that's in line with her career. And so I think some people, it is like this is their career, but then other people are really using this to be able to help them grow. And so Sarita now, when she graduates, she'll have like actual job experience and she'll have like with an international company. And I think we're really helping her to develop her professional skills, which is to a new level, and just like understanding of like that kind of dynamic of working with an international company. And she'll be able to take that, and whether she stays with us forever, which we probably would love, but like even if she didn't, like she has a whole set of skills, and we're really, it's exciting to see that kind of growth and how she's taking this opportunity and really running with it. And the fact that's happening.
How long has she been there?
She's been with us for about, not terribly long, actually, about a year and a half.
Yeah.
And so just in that amount of time, like, yeah, to be able to see that she's been able to, yeah, to be promoted to that.
Yeah. And have you noticed that in that time, like, have you noticed a shift in her? Like, you know, obviously there's that professional growth, mm-hmm, but have you noticed on a personal level?
Yeah. I think what's been really great is just to see her really develop more confidence. So, like, I think traditionally a lot of people in, like, the indigenous Quechua culture we work with, because of, like, so many generations of, like, kind of oppression, are very, very soft-spoken and very reserved. And just to see her, like, kind of just to, like, develop more confidence and confidence with her coworkers, and also now that she's in a position of responsibility to really grow into that, is exciting.
Yeah.
And it's fun. She talks about and even just, like, normal things. So she's about 22. And so just, like, talking about normal trips that she does and, like, fun things with, like, on breaks with her classmates, and they're taking little trips. And it's just, like, it's fun to see her kind of, like, coming out of her shell and really becoming, becoming her own person in that sense.
Yeah.
And really having clear vision and clear dreams for herself.
I love that. And it also makes me think about the idea of a sense of self, too. I went to Guatemala this summer with some ambassadors, and absolutely different culture, I'm sure. But when we met Anna, and when we met Rosario, who lead two different groups, I couldn't help but notice there's just this sense of self that they have through that confidence, mm-hmm, and how they've grown those businesses and grown in the careers, and, you know, and they're in this, you know, leadership role. And I bet that's so fulfilling to know that, like, Indian Collection is providing that as,
yeah,
well for the women who work there.
Especially when you talk to a lot of the women, like, what would you be doing if you weren't here? And most of them just, like, well, I'd be at home. And, like, mm-hmm, this sense of, like, once they have, like, the women, they're able to have their own income, what that really, it changes the dynamic in the family. And it, mm-hmm, means that the women with their spouses are now becoming equals, because they're, and oftentimes they're actually making more than their husband. Uh-huh. And so that has, like, really just changes the power dynamic, that they're not just seen as, like, someone who only can stay at home and only can do this, whereas, like, they still continue to love their kids beyond anything,
yeah,
like any, like, mothers, but, like, the fact that they also have a value for themselves and who they are in themselves. And we work with a lot of really great, strong women who really see that.
And have you noticed, for those that are married in the group, have you noticed that their husband, like there's been a dynamic shift in the male-female, mm-hmm, role too?
Yeah. I think Nancy and Carlos are a fun example of that. Nancy talks about how before that there actually was, like, kind of circumstances of abuse and kind of problems are related to that. But when she really began to take control of the business, and, like, it's very clearly her business. And they've really developed, like, I see, it's interesting to me that she talks about in the past there was, like, this kind of difficult violence and problems that happened in their home, because I truly see them now as having, I would say, like, a really loving marriage. And the way they tease each other and the way that they interact, like, they truly have, the power dynamic didn't just change in that she became independent and stronger, but, like, it really strengthen their relationship, because I think now Carlos really respects her, mm-hmm, and appreciates her for all she does and what she brings to the family. And the fact, and so with that, there's been a crazy kind of shift in the sense that she's definitely the person who's out there in front in their family, and they're a team and they're strong, but in terms of running the business, she's in charge of the business.
Yeah.
And there's, like, even, like, a funny little moment. I was at their workshop one time, and they had all the clothes out in the line drying, and it starts to rain, and we're working on something, and Nancy's just, Carlos, go get all the laundry. You got to bring all the laundry. And it's raining. And he, like, without even pausing, jumps up and runs out and grabs his, like, pulling all the laundry off the line. And I'm like, wow, you talk about, like, so is it, like, this kind of, like, machismo culture, but, like, this is a strong woman who's, like, she's like,
it.
Go get the laundry, go get it now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she didn't even flinch. And I just, like, you know what, you have arrived. You have really, like, you know, made that happen. And so, yeah, it's great to see how that really just kind of the strength that it brings,
yeah,
people.
That's so cool.
And I even imagine that's probably some, you know, some of you as ambassadors, the same thing, having your own business, like, has probably gives you value as well, like, within your own family to, so, like, I am a very capable person, and I have been able to achieve this on your own and, like, through your hard work. And so it's really, I really, the aspect of like ambassadors and artists and women working together, that's kind of like incredible partnership, even though there's like this distance and there's so much space and culture, but there really is that tie there, because your work, it means that they have work. And then the fact that they're, what they're working and the products they're producing gives, then that means that you have like this opportunity. And so like that kind of
need.
Connection mm-hmm. Across ties, like it's completely invisible, but it's truly there. And it's like really, yeah. It is a really women focused kind of movement in that sense.
Well, and I think this is a perfect transition to, so Jessica, unfortunately wasn't able to be here today. She's sick. And I would have loved for her to sit down with you because she's so great at these kind of conversations too. But something she told me, she was like, sit down with Joy. I think she would share such a great perspective about the current climate of Ecuador, like economic climate right now, and how that looks very different for the Women of Andean Collection and how New Day plays a role in that.
Absolutely. Yeah. So Ecuador in South America is actually one of the bigger oil producing countries. And so just geographically, we're located kind of next to Venezuela, below Colombia, and the country is very, very much dependent on oil. And so the huge drop in oil prices internationally, while it's great for drivers, it means that the government now is completely out of money. And the government being one of the larger employers in the country, that means has had tremendous economic repercussions, and the country's in a pretty serious recession. And so government, they froze salaries for several months. They're not paying government contracts. So like even like a friend of mine, she works for like an NGO that's promoting bicycling in the city, and they weren't paid on their contract for 9 months. And so she wasn't paid for 9 months. And so a lot of companies, unfortunately, have had a lot of layoffs, and there's been a lot of shrinkage. And then that has like so many ripple down effects. And so Ecuador right now is in a period of a lot of economic instability, and had that. But what's been really reassuring for the people that we work with, the artisans that we work with, I get a lot of times like questions like, how are you affected? And like the answer is actually we're not. Like, and I think for the women, the people that we work with, the fact that they have a job that's not influenced by these like national forces, but it has like a bigger job security, that's incredible for them in terms of like peace of mind. Mm-hmm. So they're not like, they're looking at the circumstances, and they're obviously very involved because of their neighbors and their extended family, but they know that for them and their families, it's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that those jobs for them are that their income and their family well-being is secure in a midst of like, kind of like a little bit of like storminess is really remarkable. And that's because of like having those connections with Noonday, and kind of we're going back to like having Noonday, how they planned their orders very consistently and very conscientiously.
Yeah. Well, and that just speaks to how important the ambassador role is. Like we couldn't make that happen without ambassadors in their communities, asking people to host shows and hustling for orders. And, you know, for those of you listening, like I really, it's my hope that like that is connecting for you, that, you know, even though Ecuador is in this economic downturn, like the Women of Andean Collection and men, I'm sure there's some in there too.
A couple.
They are, you know, I don't know if protected is the right word, but they're protected from that impact. And, you know, you're able to share with your customers and your hostesses that their purchases are the ones that enable that, and that they are able to participate in that too. And, you know, we vote with our dollars and we make change with our dollars, and it's not insignificant.
Exactly. We had the other summer two ambassador groups come and visit us, and they were able to take some time and just like have a sharing time with the women. And it was really beautiful. It was like literally everyone was in tears. And just the women literally sharing in tears, like how much that job means to them. There's one woman, and she has a daughter who's special needs. Mm-hmm. And just she was talking about how much this job means to her family, just not only in terms of the economics, but the fact that she's able to work because the job is such that it's flexible in terms of the hours and flexible in terms of her to be able to respond to the special needs that her daughter has. And so she wouldn't be able to do that in a different type of job. So it's not like she could just go get a different job working somewhere else. Like because of the kind of special circumstances in her family, she's able to work. And so she was expressing that to the ambassador who came and visited, it was just one of the, it was incredibly moving. And just seeing how much that really matters.
Yeah. Well, and something that Karen Gibbs has shared here on the podcast too, and I'm sure just she shares this tidbit anyways, is it's this mutual, I said this earlier, but a mutual need. Like, it's not just the artisans need ambassadors, but it's also the ambassadors need artisans. Like, ambassadors wouldn't have their jobs without mm-hmm. Indian Collection. And, you know, there's so many stories that are shared in our community of, you know, for those who are married and have a family, like maybe they're able to pay for their child's therapy. Or for those who are unmarried, like this is a great supplemental income for them. Or it allows them to pursue another passion while they're selling Noonday. And, you know, it pays for people's student loans. It pays for vacations. You know, it meets needs, but it also allows people to go beyond just meeting needs too, if that's mm-hmm. what they're able to do. And that was a huge shift for me too, because I think as you're new to fair trade or ethically shopping, I think one of the first things that I learned when I was new to all that is exactly what Karen said. It's a mutual need, and we're able to meet each other's needs. And there's this inherent beauty and dignity to what handmade products are, because there's a story behind it and there's this inherent connection. Like, it couldn't have happened without either party.
Exactly. And I think kind of with that, like going off the idea of like handmade, is just like the craftsmanship that goes mm-hmm. into these pieces. And so in Andean Collection, we really focus on seed-based production. And so a lot of the products that we're working with is tagua. And so they're not just the necklace is handmade, but the individual beads are handmade. And so like what that looks like, tagua is a palm tree knot, and it's a pretty large knot. It's like the size of a mm-hmm. large golf ball or tennis balls even sometimes. And what you can do, it's white inside. They call it vegetable ivory. And so it's dried. It's kind of like you picture like a walnut. You have to shave off a lot of different layers, kind of get the shell off. And then what you can do is you cut it and shape it in a lot of different ways. But to be able to get those precise shapes, and especially if you want kind of like crisp angles or any sort of like really interesting, intricate shape, that's all done handwork. And it's all very, very, it's a labor intensive process. But what I think that means is it means that it has like that much more value to it. And mm-hmm. so it's not just like a plastic bead or even a metal cast bead, which can be done kind of really quickly. It really is a labor intensive piece. But with that, it's amazing that the artisans who make those tagua shapes, they love it. They mm-hmm. like, they get so excited when we come to them with like a challenging new idea. Like, can you do something like this? Would it be a little bit harder? And they're like, we don't know. And they're like, yeah, we're going to take it on. And
it's interesting work.
It's like, they yeah. really love what they do. And for them, it's not just a job. Like, they love tagua. They truly love tagua. And they love the challenge of being able to do something new and innovative. And they love the fact that we're pushing them to do something yeah. new and innovative. And so when you have that piece, that's like a piece of craftsmanship. It's not just like, oh, here's another necklace you can throw on, but it's actually a piece of like true craftsmanship that somebody has like poured their passion into. Yeah. And you're giving them that space to be able to pursue their passion, because it's really, they truly love what they're doing.
Yeah.
And this, they love the material and like what the material is able to do. And even like stepping back from that, is one of the things we love about tagua specifically, and the other seeds that we work with, is that they are, because they're a non-timber resource, it's helping the environment. So mm-hmm. people that are living in rural areas are able to have an economic benefit from their land that doesn't require deforestation. Mm-hmm. In Ecuador being a place, a lot of places in South America where deforestation is rampant and where they're losing acres and acres of the rainforest, this is a source of income for these people to be able to put, that allows them to serve their land in a more natural state and not have
That's
to.
So cool. I never realized that. Yeah. I'm sure that there's some ladies listening who have some customers who are very eco-friendly. So take note of that. Tagua yeah. is like right up their alley. That's
exactly.
So cool.
Yeah. And so kind of that's like why we focus really on those sort of like natural materials. And that's like a very kind of a key part. And so the different type of seeds, they have that really great environmental aspect as well. So it's not just social, but there really is an environmental benefit there too.
Man, this is like hitting every side. That's so cool. Well, and to close today, you know, this whole episode has been, for me, very inspiring, and I'm sure for a lot of ladies listening too. But is there anything that you would like to share to help get our ambassadors like through this December month and like to keep going, and anything encouraging that you want to share with them, or anything that they could take back to their customers to help encourage them?
just very much like thanking you for your efforts and thanking you from as like the voice, the spokesperson from the artisans for making this possible. You make their Christmas possible and you make like their holiday celebration possible. And the fact that they're able to have that, this kind of like celebration, it truly is a fun celebration. Mm-hmm. And so just encouraging you to continue the, to continue your hard work and that this is just like, and to, but then to kind of step back and from like a Latin American perspective to really just embrace your family because that's mm-hmm. what matters in the end. And really just being able to enjoy that.
And knowing that you're allowing someone in Ecuador to be able to embrace their family.
Exactly. Yeah. And so kind of really just enjoying all of that, what that means and that kind of valuing that time with the family and friends that you have. And when I picture like our workshop, what it is like, it's a group of women and they're sitting around a table and just constant laughing and constant chatter to the extent that sometimes we have to close the office door because we can't work. And but just really making that kind of like embracing that sense of community, because that's really, I think what Noonday is doing, it's more than just jewelry. It's like building community and kind of building that within your life as well. And especially holidays, what better time?